Well, she knows how to make it entertaining, and this lady friends knows her stuff about animals. We'll talk about the Morris Animal Foundation in a little bit, which will prove my point. I mean, you do walk the walk. You did it for a long time. Was this show in the 1950s or 60s?
It was 70, 71.
Oh, okay. Okay, so it was not live TV.
At one point, I had a water buffalo, which is one of the most dangerous animals extant. And I had a water buffalo on the stage, and I was standing there scratching his ear and stuff. And it was just a lovely moment. And then all of a sudden, he just turned and gave me a great big kiss. Now, if you haven't been kissed by a water buffalo, you haven't lived.
I haven't. The rumors, see, if it were to happen today, it would be in the Star and the Inquirer.
Oh,
there would
you
be,
know.
Yeah,
you know.
There would be rumors about it. You're doing regular television again. I mean, you've got one of those characters on Boston Legal, but I don't know that if it's the way it's written, which is what you're going to say, but I will say it's the actress who's playing it once again. I mean, you were nominated when you played this character on The Practice. You were nominated for an Emmy, were you not?
Yes, I didn't expect. I thought when I got a call to do a guest shot on Boston Legal, it was just a one-shot guest shot. But when I got the script, I found it was the same lady I had played on The Practice, which was such fun. She's not the nicest lady in the world. And she commits murder and gets away with it and all that stuff. But she's fun to play.
All right, now you've played the nicest person in the entire world, I think, was Rose Nyland.
Oh, I loved Rose.
And now you're playing one of the nastiest. And then I guess Sue Ann Nivens was somewhere in between.
Well, she was a neighborhood nymphomaniac.
Yes. Do you prefer playing nasty or nice?
Oh, I liked Rose. I don't know. I just liked her optimism and her we get so much negative these days,
yeah,
that it was nice to play positive.
Do you think, and I've got to ask this question, you know, my job is to ask the questions people would think, and you think, you know, I understand Estelle Getty is not well, but do you think that the three of you, Rue McClanahan and Bea Arthur and you, could get together to do something?
Oh, well, we get together, our fifth season is just out. It just came out Tuesday on DVD, so we have done a few appearances together, you know, just to promote the DVD. But they've offered us movies, they've offered us new series and all that, and B just will not do it.
Hmm.
When Golden Girls went off after the seventh season, Susan Harris, who created it, had this other idea for a show of the three of us, Bea got married and left. Rue and Estelle and I bought a hotel in Florida, and we left our nice, secure little home, and we were going to meet the world through the lobby of the hotel. But the four of us were such a unit that you take one very strong member away, it's like taking a leg off a table. It just didn't work.
Okay, now I'm going to prove my chops to you that I once did do entertainment reporting. Of course, I could be wrong. Won't be the first time. But wasn't one of the employees at that hotel none other than Don Cheadle?
He was our manager. Do you believe it? Cheech Marin was our chef, and Don Cheadle was our manager. And, oh, the work he has gone on to do, he's just magnificent.
So when you work with a young actor, and even, you know, he was a young actor at that time, do you see anything in people that some people, and you say, that person is going to be a star?
No. I would love to say, oh, yes, I knew it all along. You're not that smart. And in that kind of situation comedy, everybody is, you know, does what he has to do and all that, but poor Don, he didn't have an opportunity to show that magnificent talent. He was very good at what he did, but you never think beyond that as, well, this is one of the major stars of the world.
Yeah, I mean, what an intense, great actor.
Great actor.
Yeah. And very, very good in dramatic sorts of things. Nothing can be more dramatic as a sort of thing than the work that a lot of scientists do to help animals, as I try to transition back.
Because, nice segue.
Not really, but that was the best I could do. It wasn't all that nice, but what I want to talk about and need to talk about is an organization I feel strongly about. It's called the Morris Animal Foundation. Explain for those who don't know, and most who listen to me regularly do know, what this organization is.
I've been with the Morris Animal Foundation since 1970, and we have, it's a health organization. We fund humane studies into specific health problems of dogs, cats, horses, and zoo and wildlife. And we help develop the feline leukemia vaccine. We help develop the parvovirus vaccine, the Potomac horse fever vaccine. It's just a magnificent organization.
Mm-hmm. And everyone has heard about those gorillas that are in Rwanda. That's another Morris Animal Foundation project.
The mountain gorillas, yes, and there are none in captivity, and it's such a disappearing thing. We were down to so few animals, and we worked with Diane Fossey. She would get medication from us and try to help her mountain gorilla, her wild mountain gorillas. Well, when Diane was killed, we continued to try to help the population of mountain gorillas, and now it's more than doubled. The numbers have gone up. I think it got down to something like a little over 200 animals, and now we're up to almost 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
We're very proud of that.
Yeah, and by saving the mountain gorillas, or at least being well on the way to doing that, I hope, other animals that live in the region are protected as well.
That's right, because it's, but let's face it, animals and people all over the planet, it's a whole new world, and are being, as our numbers in people grow, the habitats shrink and food is scarce, so there's a lot of poaching and all that for bushmeat, and that doesn't help a population of animals sustain itself.
Betty, are you optimistic about, because I know you keep track of what goes on in the world concerning wildlife as well, optimistic about the future, or do you worry?
Well, I think we all worry these days terribly, but I'm not going to waste whatever energy I have on just worrying about it. I'd rather accentuate, I know this sounds so sickening to a lot of people, but I'd rather accentuate the positives and the things we are gaining on and the things we are able to help, and celebrate those as we work to help more, than just sitting beating our breasts and saying, oh, isn't this terrible, and we're all going downhill from here.
Mm-hmm. Do you think sometimes we're not, as a society, we tend to look at the glass half empty rather than half full?
Oh, I think so. I think that's kind of human nature, don't you, Steve?
I don't know. It seemed, and, you know, I'm not that old, but it seems that X number of years ago, maybe we did look at things a little more optimistically.
Man, I'm sure my age is showing, because
No.
I grew up being taught to, you know, all right, you can't do anything about that, but you can do something about this. We'll take the positive route. And now it seems a lot of people just want to just shake their heads and say, oh, no, what's the use, you know?
Yeah, and that's, I think, the worst thing you can do is you know, whether you call it apathy or frustration, I think that everyone can make a difference in some way. I truly do.
You really can. And I don't care how small the area is. If you can make one little bit of difference in a tiny little area, you put that, add that to all the other people. If they were all doing the same thing, it's a pretty positive movement.
Well, I mean, really, I mean, if you save one dog or cat in a shelter, if you volunteer for 1 week, not a year even, although that's nice, 1 week at a shelter, you're making a difference. If you're going out with a community filled with kids that are picking up litter for a weekend, you've made a difference.
You've made a difference, and even if you just spread the word of kindness and consideration to your animal friends, you have made a big difference.
Well, you know, we know through research, and I often end those keynote talks saying something like what I'm about to say to you. We do know from research that people who are murderers, mass murderers, we know all of them, each and every one, has practice on animals. Most people that commit violent crimes are violent to animals. Those who abuse people practice on animals first as well in almost all cases. So I wonder if that's true, and that is true, that those of us who grow up with animals and are kind to animals, and appropriately so, learn then to be kinder to people as well.
Oh, I think it has to work that way. You have to consider somebody besides yourself. And if you're kind to animals, and then the next time somebody, a person is in trouble, you reach out there too. I have to believe that. And it sure makes living day to day a lot more comfortable and enthusiastic than always accenting the negative. The Latham Foundation has done wonderful work they work with the police and all that, saying if there's animal cruelty, don't stop there. Look beyond, because there's undoubtedly cruelty within that household somewhere going on with people.
And yeah, in
so
fact,
animals point the direction for us in so many different walks of life.
Yeah, in fact, animal investigators, are now working in many communities with police departments because just what you said. I mean, if they find cruelty to animal in a household, they will automatically now, it happens with the computer instantly, the police get notified just like that and make a visit.
And it makes it, talk about making a difference, it makes a big one.
Yeah.
I love the way that dogs are always finding a new job. You know, we've seen what they do as far as detection and as far as, I mean, when they work with somebody who has grand seizures,
yeah.
I mean, they will alert the person. But I love the whole new thing now is children reading to their
yes.
pets. And they get, all of a sudden, they get hung up and interested in reading, and the pets don't criticize, they just sit and listen, and it's a wonderful whole new thing that makes reading a lot easier for children.
Yeah, in fact, I have a story coming out on just that subject in a couple of weeks in USA Weekend. Betty White, it's a pleasure that you've given us for all these years, a pleasure that you've given me, and a great conversation for the last 25 or 20 minutes.
Well, I never shut up, do I?
No.
Thank you, dear.
You are a joy to talk with, a joy to watch on television. I thank you. I know that I am speaking for each and every one of our listeners. I know this because I talked to them all before the show. And they said, thank Betty White for me for all the joy she has given us. Thank you, Betty White.
Well, thank you, Steve, and keep spreading the good word.
I will try. Thank you so much.
Thanks a million, dear. Bye-bye.